China has prepared for a U.S. crackdown over Hong Kong governance issues. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. At a news briefing in Beijing today, a Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson said his country is opposed to any U.S. interference in China's Hong Kong affairs. That's after new security laws, which went into force last year, were aimed at restricting pro-democracy demonstrations and press freedom. Reports suggest now Washington is readying fresh sanctions on Chinese officials, alongside a warning to companies about the ability to conduct international business in Hong Kong. Action from the U.S. could come as early as today, as the BBC's Katie Silver reports.
This will be the first advisory we've seen from Washington regarding any sort of advice or warnings given to businesses operating in Hong Kong. We understand the State Department is likely to flag what it sees as certain threats. One of these is potentially any data that an American company has within Hong Kong. They may well say that that is going to be privy to the Chinese Communist Party. It also seems like they're likely to flag this new law that means that China may place tit-for-tat sanctions on any businesses or individuals that comply with Western sanctions against Chinese officials. It's also, from what we understand, what reports are suggesting is that it's likely to mention recent events, particularly that of Apple Daily and businesses that are already feeling the heat of these national security law and crackdown by authorities there. We're also understanding as well that we're likely to see the White House extend its list of Chinese officials and individuals that have U.S. sanctions placed upon it.
That's Katie Silver reporting there. Checking the numbers now, benchmarks across Asia ended their session little changed today. European shares are also range-bound this morning, with global oil prices drifting up about 0.5%. To South Africa now, where President Cyril Ramaphosa has arrived in the port city of Durban. It's the epicenter of violence, which the president called an assault on democracy. It's killed more than 100 people over the last week. Troops have been deployed to contain protests that caused shortages of food, medicine, and fuel. Afavani Shifalaro is the executive director of the South Africa Petroleum Industry Association. He explains the specific impact looting has had on getting fuel supplies to gas stations across the country.
We don't have shortage of product. The problem that we have experienced, it was the movement from the supply points to the areas where we need to deliver the products. Most of these areas, they are at the ports of Durban in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. And those were the areas that were like targeted by the rioters. So the immediate decision that was taken was to halt the operations. That is what caused like the shortage, but the movement of products by pipeline is still continued.
Now, the nation's biggest refinery in Durban has been temporarily switched off. How quickly and easily can it get back online and allow more petrol to be distributed across the country?
To bring it back online, I mean, we are told that it's not a big thing because it was not a total shutdown. Remember, they just put the refinery pretty much, I mean, on idle. So as a matter of fact, we have been told that the refinery is already back. They are ramping up the activities since like yesterday.
There are fears that the knock-on effect of potential fuel shortages would cause problems for food supplies across the country. Are those fears sort of being alleviated a little bit today as the situation improves?
As the trucks now start to move again, we anticipate that it might start to affect the rate at which we have to replenish stocks. But at least it's anticipated because it will probably be along the major corridors. They will probably make sure that they prioritize those service stations that will be servicing the lorries that will be on the road.
Afavani Shifalaro from the South Africa Petroleum Industry Association. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
It's finally Friday, so perhaps a post-work happy hour is in order. Gin is the spirit of choice for many of us, including me, on these warm summer evenings. But long ago, it was known as Mother's Ruin, and for many years, it had an unwelcome reputation as an unsophisticated drink. But in much more recent times, gin has had a glamorous makeover. The BBC's Elizabeth Hodson reports from the St. Giles area of London's Covent Garden.
Nowadays, you can't move for expensive shops and fancy bars, and the headquarters of a huge global tech company bears down over what were once some of the least salubrious streets in London. This area was the heart of London's supposed gin craze in the 18th century. It was immortalised in William Hogarth's painting Gin Lane, which depicts an intoxicated mother dropping her baby, an incapacitated drinker slumped in a wheelbarrow, and a general sense of booze-soaked chaos. A series of taxes was piled onto gin to curb sales, but the taste for it never really went away, and centuries later, it's contributing to a business boom here in the UK and over in the US. So why do people have such a thirst for the juniper-infused spirit? Just ask Temi Sugalola. She's a Londoner with Nigerian heritage who decided during the pandemic to launch a new gin brand.
I saw that a lot of botanicals or the fruits that you've used were very much Western fruits. And the fruits I saw growing up from Africa, things like sorrel, which is very popular in the Caribbean, or zobo, which is very popular in West Africa.
So where are the global hotspots for sales?
I'm Emily Neal. I'm the head of research at the IWSR Drinks Market Analysis. So the Philippines is actually the largest gin market in the world. It's generally quite low priced and very local gin. But actually some of the most interesting growth is coming from the Americas. So Brazil has been having a real gin boom in the last few years. And in fact, since 2019, the market's nearly doubled for gin. Then we have some other markets in Africa, for example.
Neil says the rise in gin drinking is largely down to a wider variety of mixes and gin flavours, thanks to the craft gin movement. Temi Sugalola, who runs Black Crown Gin, says, however, that the spirit still has a bit of an image problem in her native British Nigerian community.
Gin is still very much growing within the Afro-Caribbean community. They associate gin with something older gentlemen would drink. It's something you would give to your in-laws when you're getting married. We are looking at ways to revamp the old without it losing its history.
But she's optimistic about a gin breakthrough, and she says her generation is working to preserve the gin's original spirit, whilst also making it their own with unique flavour profiles and flavour twists. And the BBC's Elizabeth Hodson for Marketplace.
Well, from gin to whiskey, an entire distillery today will be shipped from Scotland to China. It'll be Inner Mongolia's first whiskey distillery when it opens, likely at the end of this year. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.